Welcome to the Heart Zone, featuring George Cannon. This broadcast is a time of teaching and encouragement from Curwensville Christian Church. For more information, we invite you to visit us on the web at www.curwensvillechristian.org. And now for a message from the Heart Zone. Here's George Cannon.
All right, guys, I need you to turn to John chapter 18. John chapter 18. We're in that final section of John. You know, we've been going through the Gospel of John, wanting to get to know him, and we're going to get to know him some more today. But also, as we've been getting to know Jesus, you can't help but read the Gospel and have it reveal to you who you are and the things that you and I struggle with. And we're going to see that especially today, because it's going to talk about Jesus as he goes through these Jewish trials. So I want to help you to understand. So when we look at what takes place, the first thing is he goes through a series of Jewish trials with the high priest and the high priest's son-in-law, and they're trying to find something to bring as an accusation against him. So we're going to see how Jesus reacts to that. We're going to learn some things about him. But also, we're going to learn about ourselves through Peter, because intertwined in this story is the story of Peter's failure. And we're all aware of it. And what is Peter's failure? Where he denies Jesus how many times? Three times before the rooster crows. And we're going to see why that takes place, because of all the people, I mean, we already know Jesus predicted that he's going to deny him three times, which Peter denies that that's going to take place. Well, I mean, here it's just a few short hours that takes place, and we're going to see that today. And we're going to learn some lessons here, because what we're going to see from both Jesus and Peter is how they're responding to the pressure. And let's be honest, there's some severe pressure going on here, and that is Jesus has been arrested, he's going to face death. There's pressure there, pressure on Peter as well. Why? There's the concern, is are they going to come after his disciples, of which Peter is probably one of the chief ones. So what does that got to do with you and I? Well, I want to start off talking about the moment of failure. We all have them. We all have a moment of failure in which we may say we'll never do something. And you've heard that, never say never, right? Because you'll end up doing what you say you'll never do. And but yet we keep making those statements. I'll never do that. Well, yeah, try. Yep, it happens. And so those are our moments of failure. And it's very devastating in the life of a believer. So I just want to make a couple of points here. So why does that take place? Well, here it is. First one, our interaction with Jesus gives us a level of confidence as we face life. It's only natural that we get to a place of a point of failure, because when you interact with Jesus, and what I mean by interact with him is when you're praying with him and you're reading your word and you grow in your relationship with him and you're seeing him answer prayer and you're seeing him interact in your life, and what seems like, wow, that's amazing that happened, but you realize it's God working in your life and doing things and orchestrating things in your life. There can be a level of confidence with you that I'll never do stuff. I'll never do something wrong. I've got Jesus. I'm okay from here on out. And I try to warn folks that, you know, given the right circumstances, the right situation, who's to say that we wouldn't do what we are actually condemning others for? Every one of us here has the possibility of doing wrong. And as believers, we should be aware of that. And part of the thing is that we get really confident in knowing Jesus. Now, here's what happens. Intense pressure causes us to respond in ways we never thought we would. Stuff happens. And here you are, you think, I will never do that. But then, remember what I said, right circumstances, right situation. Who's to say you won't? And guess what life does? Life brings you into those pressure points. He brings you into situations where you are faced with, what do I do now? And sometimes the choice isn't a good choice. Sometimes we do things we never thought we would. You've been there. I mean, this is not like, oh, we're talking about somebody else. We've all been there, right? I mean, it's a reality that we face. Well, I would never do that. I think back through life as I think about family members. I even think about myself. I would never do that. I would never. And then you do that, and then you have it brought up. Well, didn't you say you would never do that? Yeah, but you know. And here's what we do. We make an excuse. Well, I never thought I would face that, or I never thought this. You know, I had to do with that because of the circumstance. And so we have this failure. Now, the problem is, here's the problem, and it's because of our culture. We defined ourselves by our moments of failure. We look at ourselves based on what we didn't do when we should have done something else. We define ourselves by our sins and our failures. And the insidious lie is that somehow God has changed now in how he sees you because of that. He's changed. Well, can I tell you this? I was going to tell you this later on. I might as well tell you it right now. Did you not think that he knew you were going to mess up? Remember, we're talking about Jesus who tells Peter, before this night's over, you're going to deny me 3 times. But I've prayed for you. Still Jesus reaching out, right? My friends, he is not shocked by our failures. And his plan for you includes your failures. So realize that. So let's look at this, because we're going to contrast it here. We're going to look at the pressure and how Jesus responds. And be honest with you, the reason why Jesus responds the way he responds is because he's Jesus. But then we're going to see Peter, and the reason why Peter responds the way he responds is because he's human. Jesus is Jesus, both fully human and fully God. He can be that way, but that's not you and I. In fact, I relate to Peter here. Let's look at it together. Look with me, verse 12. We're going to look through verse 27, chapter 18. Then the detachment of troops and captains of the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. And they led him to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year. Now it was Caiaphas who had advised the Jews that it was expedient that one should die for the people. Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Now that disciple was known to the high priest and went with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door outside, and when the other disciple who was known to the high priest went out and spoke to her who kept the door, and brought Peter in. Then the servant girl who kept the door said to Peter, "You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you?" And he said, "I am not." Now the servants and officers who had made a fire of coals stood there, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves. And Peter stood with them and warmed himself. Then the high priest asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. Jesus answered him, "I spoke openly to the world. I've always taught in synagogues and in the temple, where the Jews always meet. In secret, I have said nothing. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said." Then, when he had said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, "Do you answer the high priest like that?" Jesus answered him, "If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. If well, why do you strike me?" Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. Therefore, they said to him, "You are not also one of his disciples, are you?" And he denied it and said, "I am not." One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of him whose ear Peter cut off, said, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" And he denied again, and immediately the rooster crowed. All right, so folks, here's what we're going to do. We're going to look, first of all, at Jesus, learn some things about Jesus. And as we learn about Jesus, I need you to recognize, how is that going to help us in our understanding of him? It's going to show you how he operates and who he is as he deals with things in your life. And then we're going to look at Peter. And as we look at Peter, we're going to make some observations, which I think we can all resonate with, because let's be honest, we're like Peter. I'm not. All the more so, you're like Peter. Because isn't that like what Peter says? I will never do that. I will die for you, Jesus. Okay, yeah. Yep. And Jesus said to him, before this night's over, you will deny me three times. So let's look at these together. First of all, let's talk about Jesus. It's interesting. What's going on here? So let me give you a little bit of background. So the Romans were very funny. According to the Jews, when you selected a high priest, the high priest was the high priest until he died. Now, the Romans didn't like that system. They didn't want power, especially religious power, any civil power, to be vested in any one man of a nation that they had conquered. So what they did was, is they didn't like the thought of a high priest being the high priest for life. So what they did was, is they would, after a period of time, maybe a year or two or three, they would then pick another high priest. Now, to the Jew, if the high priest is still living, he's still the high priest. But that wasn't the way it was with the Romans. So Annas is the older one. He was high priest until what? The Romans said, you're no longer high priest. So they made Caiaphas, his son-in-law, the high priest. So here you have Annas. And, of course, you'll notice the servant, when he strikes Jesus, refers to him as, why do you speak to the high priest that way? The actual high priest, according to the Romans that year, was Caiaphas. So I'm just trying to get you to understand the background here. So what they're doing is they arrest Jesus, and according to the Jewish system, their legal system, a man cannot bear witness against himself. They have to have witnesses to make the accusation. But notice what they're doing. They're going against their own system, and they bring him in and they start questioning him. They start putting pressure on him because they want Jesus to say something incriminating. But what you're going to see about Jesus as he's in the midst of the pressure, he doesn't respond like a human. He responds like somebody who's on a mission. He's out to serve who and fulfill whose plan? The Father's plan. So that brings up two things I want you to see here. Here's the first one. Jesus faced intense pressure to incriminate himself. We see that here in verse 19 to 21. Here's what it says. The high priest then asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. Jesus answered, I've spoke openly to the world. I always taught in the synagogues and in the temple where the Jews always meet, and in secret I've said nothing. Why do you ask me? Ask those who heard me what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said. So here's Jesus. He's getting this. They're wanting him to incriminate himself. He says, look, everything I've ever taught, I've done in a synagogue or in a temple, everyone has heard me. Why are you asking me? If I've said something wrong, let somebody come in and say that I've said wrong. Bring out the witnesses. He's holding his ground. He's not allowing the pressure to what? Buckle himself. Now, I think it's interesting because here's the thing. Have you noticed we have a natural tendency? We're going to talk about it here in a minute. I'm like this. Somebody starts coming and making accusations against me. What's our natural reaction? We get what? Defensive. We feel now that we're the ones who have to what? Defend ourselves, say what we need to say, and prove our innocence. Now, if you and I were facing the intense questioning of those leaders that night, knowing that they're wanting to kill me and find anything, our natural tendency is to want to defend ourselves. Jesus is like, hey, I've been speaking among you for a long time in the synagogues and in the temples. Everyone has heard me. If I've said something wrong, where are they who said that I said something wrong? It's So he's holding his own. He faces intense pressure to incriminate himself, but he holds his own. Here's what I'm saying. Jesus did not buckle under the pressure and challenged their actions. He didn't buckle. In fact, it gets worse. They hit him. They weren't allowed to do that in the Jewish system. When they went through a trial, you weren't supposed to lay your hands on the accused until a verdict has been rendered. And here's what happens. Here he is, he's responding, bring out the witnesses. The guard next to him says, don't you talk to the high priest that way. And it says with an open hand, with his palm, he slaps Jesus on the side of his face. But notice how Jesus responds. Jesus says to him, if I've spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why do you strike me? He's not letting the pressure buckle him. You know, there's an interesting little book. I don't think we have any copies of it. I think we do. It's A.W. Tozer's Five Vows of Spiritual Powers. I think it's the third vow Tozer wrote, never defend